Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I'm delighted to be joined now by someone. I feel she's quietly becoming one of the great Irish actresses of her generation. So in the last few months alone, we saw her in Small Things Like These and then the Disney show Say Nothing about Jean McConville and the other disappeared. And now she's starring in Chris O'Dowd's new Sky TV show, Small Town, Big Story. Eileen Walsh, you're very welcome.
Hey, Brendan, how are you?
Good, thanks. So, come here, you're a busy woman. Do you work all the time? Because I would have thought the good thing about acting is the resting bit, like.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, what's amazing is that you can have a really busy year followed by a very quiet year.
Okay.
So, I'm going through a very quiet time, but it's perfectly timed because we just moved home from London after 20 years in London.
When you say home now, do you mean Ireland or do you mean Cork?
Yeah, well, no, not Cork, but Dublin.
Okay,
as close to home as I could
there,
get. Yeah, exactly. So I'm busy in the sense of buying plasterboard and sorting insulation and all that kind of stuff, which is great.
What's it like being home?
It's really lovely.
Yeah.
It's really lovely, like unexpectedly so. You know, Stuart went to the supermarket recently and his bill came to €50, 12 cent or something. And he said, look, oh, there's another €20 or something. And the kid behind the counter went, you don't want to break the 20. And the kid took out 20 cent from his own pocket. He was like, that would never happen anywhere else, you know.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. It's lovely to be back and the girls are settling in. And yeah, it's lovely.
How old are they?
Tippy is 19 and Ethel is 16.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
So they're
they mean
they're,
business,
they're,
Brendan.
Yeah, really. So you've two full-time jobs on the go,
yeah,
so resettling
absolutely.
On that. Okay. So listen, like, people know you very well as an actress. They mightn't know as much about you as a person. Just a bit of background. So you grew up in Cork, Quaker Road, which is kind of in the city centre, really.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about your life and family growing up.
Yeah. So I'm the youngest of six and we lived in my granddad's house. My mum took care of him. When her mum died, she became kind of head of the family, really. And so she and my dad helped raise my aunt as well in the house. And then we were all born into that house. So it was a very busy house that was really headed by my granddad. And then my parents, with the tremendous amount of love, kind of took care of him right up until he died. So it was very busy and very full of noise and extra family all the time, brothers and sisters coming in and whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, lived in the city centre and went to the South Prez and then hit the road at 17.
Okay.
And started acting.
I saw you mention a sister of yours, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She died when she was six, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you mind telling me about her?
No, not at all. My God. Elizabeth was born just before me. She falls in between myself and Bernadette. And Elizabeth was born both mentally and physically disabled. They never knew what she had or what she was born with. I know my mum had a kind of a complicated delivery. But she was adored in our house.
Yeah.
Like my, there's a picture of her that we all, you know, grew up with. It was over the telly, Pride of Place, obviously, just over the telly. And it's Elizabeth sitting on my dad's Ford Escort on the bonnet, and she had a little dungaree dress on with smile embroidered across the chest of it.
Yeah.
And she had little calipers on her legs and everything. And she, you know, there was never any expectation that she might walk or would do whatever. And my granddad built her a walker in the living room and it was amazing. And beautiful pictures of her at the beach with my mum and dad and all the other kids, you know. But she was utterly, utterly adored. And it's really kind of seen, I think my parents had such incredible faith as well. She was very much seen as a little angel that was left with us for a brief moment,
okay,
you know.
Yeah.
And then I came along.
Did Elizabeth's life and death, does that have a very formative influence on you, and does it like have a big impact on the family?
A huge impact on the family. I mean, I don't know how my parents got through it and got over her death with so many of us all around and, you know, and their own grief.
Yeah.
But her presence remains still.
Really?
Her little shoes with a specially built up heel, they're still there on the shelves at home. And that little picture of her with a smile written across.
Yeah.
Many years later, like my parents never had much money at all. But many years later, they were changing that picture got sun blushed or whatever, you know. And they were changing the picture. And in behind that picture was a small little watercolour. And it had been kept perfectly preserved because Elizabeth's picture's in the front of it. And they took it, it went into auction and it came out with like, I don't know, £300, like pounds. It would have been euro actually, I guess, at the time. But which was a huge windfall for my parents and everything. And it was like Elizabeth kind of gifted them that, you know.
Yeah.
But always, you know, she'd be 50 something now had she lived. And I know she died. My mum and my dad were eager to try and get her up for the Pope's visit, but she wasn't well enough to travel. And she died not long around then, I think. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Look, sorry notes for bringing that
not
up.
Not at but all. That was, that's look, so it's beautiful. A gift to get to talk like, about her.
And she lived a life and made her impact.
And
right?
still makes an impact. And we all hold her name as our confirmation name.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
that's
lovely.
And then you, were you kind of extrovert performing? Kind of, you're very funny. Were you a funny kid like?
I think I was a funny kid, but I didn't know how to be funny. I just knew I wanted to make people laugh, you know? So I remember desperately trying to impress my brother and his friends. And trying to make up jokes that had no, like, why did the Kerry man fall out the window? Because he was ironing the curtains. Like, I had absolutely no idea what the joke was. I just knew if I just had to be bold enough and try it, they'd laugh.
Yeah.
And so, I always wanted to kind of entertain, I guess.
And why did acting appeal then, or when did that start happening?
So my sister Catherine is an amazing actor, and she left home. She kind of paved the way. She went and did National Youth Theatre, and then did the Samuel Beckett Centre at Trinity. And she came home one Saturday and said, "You know, that's where you belong." And she threw me into Saturday morning workshops in Cork.
So was it an arty family? Like there was a sense that this could be a real path in life. Like
she's the one that made it possible.
Yeah.
That you suddenly go, you can do this as a profession. You don't have to do arts in UCC. Like that was the big catch-all for everything, wasn't it?
Just
get the points for arts and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
So Catherine made it seem. But other than that, when I look back now, my mum's side of the family in particular, they were all, you know, poets, storytellers, great singers, but also had their proper job.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
Uncle
rich
Willie
scenes
is a great
of that in families in Cork.
Yes.
Isn't there?
Like,
there's loads of hidden opera singers and everything.
Absolutely, and the Cat Club,
Cork
Art Theatre Club. You know, my aunt Frances used to write plays that would go on there. But at the time, it was seen as, oh, that's just her hobby. That's what she does. You know, and then you go, of course, that's where it came from.
And then, of course, you must have thought, sure, this is easy then, because Disco Pigs happened very quickly for you when you were very young. The play was a huge success.
Yeah. So at 17, I did Gina Moakeslee's play with Rough Magic called Danty Dan. And then Enda saw that. And Enda then approached me in my first summer off from Trinity, because I followed Catherine's lead and went to Trinity as well. And then Enda said, "Will you come back to Cork and do Disco Pigs?" So I kind of hit the ground running. You know, I was very lucky, really.
And then that took off and everything. It must have been a kind of magic time when you look back now.
I mean, it really was.
Yeah.
Like it was.
Kids like.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I there's a scene in it where I have to get beaten up and we had stage blood. So every night I'd reach in and get the stage blood and kind of maul my face from my nose down. But I wasn't fully aware at all. It was all staining my skin. I still thought I was the coolest thing in the world, walking around Edinburgh Festival with this, like, inevitably beard of fake blood next to, you know, the most beautiful boy in the world, next to Killian.
Yeah.
You know.
But. And you kind of developed a special thing with him during that time, did you?
Yeah. I mean, we all really hit, you know, had this summer of kind of ideal you know, heat in that we're all starting out, you know, Enda as well, and Pat Kiernan and Aidan Cosgrove, you know, Mick Heffernan, Cormac O'Connor, everybody who was involved in it.
Yeah.
It really felt like a summer of exploration. We kind of all bonded hugely over that. We all met our partners. We all had kids around the same time. You know, we've all stayed very close, actually.
And did you get a bit of a knock then when they made the movie?
I hated them then for that.
Did you? Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a long time. Yeah. No, it was a really good lesson early on, because you just go, you know, just because you give birth to the baby doesn't mean you get to keep the baby,
okay,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Elaine Cassidy was brilliant in it.
Of course.
We went on to play sisters many years later,
right,
at the Donmar, and never once mentioned it until
really?
The last week in the dressing room. It was a bit like, who was going to hold out?
And was it hanging there a bit?
It
for
was
you?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, right. So there was an extra frisson in that,
yeah,
play, was there?
But, you know, yeah, I kind of felt like, I suppose, when stuff like that happens, you find out who supports you and who has your back and who, you know. And so lots of people came out from, you know, in the industry to kind of go, look, oh, I'm raging you didn't get that. You should have got that. Or, but, you know, it's okay. It swings and roundabouts.
It's a hard lesson in the business as well, though, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
I'd say most of us, if we felt that kind of rejection that actors must feel a lot of the time, and it's probably nothing personal that you don't get a part, but, like,
everybody
most of us would probably
that.
Give up and go, yeah.
Everybody says it's nothing personal. It is the most personal job,
really?
You can get.
Okay.
You are giving of yourself. And if you don't get the part, yeah, it's you they don't want.
Oh, they're rejecting
like,
you.
You're like,
you're very poor. Like.
Yeah. So it's a nasty side of the job. But I think sometimes, you know, you get to flex muscles in other ways.
And what do you mean?
Well, I think you get to prove yourself. People don't think you're right for it, and then you get to prove it, and you get to kind of access other areas, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Your daughter is going into acting now, is she?
Yeah, well, both of them have a pretty, you know, attracted magnet to it.
Okay. Are you encouraging this? Or?
Well, I kind of feel like, you know, we can't fight it. It is what it is. Stuart's very good at understanding it. I'm a bit like, do you not want to do arts in UCC? Go back to the arts thing again.
Be a teacher.
Or I'd love them to be plasterers.
Yeah.
A plasterer is an electrician.
Listen,
wouldn't that be great?
AI, whatever. We always need plasterers,
you know,
and electricians. Yeah.
But yeah, no, Tippy is really good and went behind my back and got herself an agent. So, you know, she has proved herself already.
Yeah.
And has the bug.
I presume the knocks and the comparison and the rejection are probably even worse these days, are they?
I think so. But maybe they're more prepared for it because they're online all the
yes.
time and they're kind of used to the old snippy, snipiness of it. At all. But they also feel like anything is possible. You know, having so many brilliant younger actors coming out like Paul Mescal and Alison Oliver and Anna,
yeah.
you know, that Anna Hardwick, that you kind of go, right, the film careers are possible.
Yeah.
You know, it can happen just like that.
So it seems more real now
it
than
does.
It would have to you back
yeah.
in the day, yeah. Listen, you straddle both serious and comedy acting. So long before you did small things like these, you were in that Peter Mullen film, The Magdalene Sisters in 2002. There was war at the time, wasn't
yeah,
there? Like,
there
I mean,
was.
If you think of how small things like these was received.
Yeah.
Trying to tell that story like less than 25
20.
Years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I remember being home in Cork and somebody, this older woman who used to do flowers for the church, came up to me and my mum on the street and she just said, you know, that you should kind of be ashamed of yourself, that all those women have met their makers now and there's no need to go dragging up that story kind of thing. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I hope my parents don't get this when I'm not around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
did they?
Well, I think they held their own amongst it, you know. They were both my mum and dad had a very strong faith, but also were strong enough to kind of be able to see the truth that had to come out as well.
Yeah. And your Bessborough was still operating then, we know now, like.
I know,
kind of
I know.
Unaware
and
of
I think
the time,
difference,
yeah.
though, between Magdalene Sisters and Small Things, which really hit very different notes,
yeah.
Is that the shock and the anger that came out of people because when they saw Magdalene, it was their first time really coming to terms with the story. And then I think what's happening with small things quite often is that the people are frustrated that we're still not dealing with it, you know. This beautiful older woman came up to me at the launch, at the premiere of Small Things in Dublin, and she went, "I'm a survivor."
Yeah.
And she said, "The thing you got right was the sound, because you'd always hear their keys before you'd see them." And you're like, this is an older, you know, much older woman who still lives with that sound and that fear. And, well, like, they're hugely important films.
Yeah. And you played Anne Lovett's mother as well a few years ago.
Yeah, in that's film. Right.
So are those stories of that period, are they particularly important to you?
I think, like, 84, 85 for Ireland is very rich in stories really intrigues me. You've got Anne Lovett, you've got the Kerry babies, you know, there was a small earthquake that happened just off Ireland. And you think, yeah, of course there was around that time, because the whole country was changing and shifting. And I suppose that's when I grew up as well, you know, that they're the moments that you can kind of look back to. And I think it's Ireland as it was about to shift. Like, it felt incredibly poor, right? Around that time.
Yeah, but I was saying the same thing to Killian. We thought we were living in a modern country at that time, didn't we? We thought this is a new Ireland, but sure, we hadn't a clue.
No, we hadn't a clue. And you look back at it now, like when you see the opening of Small Things, that could be, you know, early 1900s as opposed to 84.
Yeah, and then you hear the human lead come on, Eileen, and you go, oh, okay. But listen, you're also one of our great comic actresses. You were saying earlier about, like, the jokes and not knowing, but I feel when you're in a comedy role, is it a bold face, or you have a kind of a comic demeanour or something?
A comic face? Is that what you're saying?
No, but there's some expression about you that, like, you're kind of in on a joke or something.
I think the classic thing with any drama or comedy, it doesn't really matter. It's having an openness and a willingness to be fragile. And so it's not, it's like having an access to, like, if you have to play a sexy character, I wouldn't necessarily think myself sexy, but if you have to play that character, it's brilliant getting to access that and go, I'm going to go 100% on this.
Okay, yeah.
And so you kind of, I think people can really empathize with just a boldness, I guess, you know.
I think a high watermark of it was probably Kate in Sharon Horgan's Catastrophe.
God, I love her.
Yeah.
I love her so much.
Were you kind of a little bit in awe of her,
I mean, Sharon and I started following each other on Twitter at the time. Not on Twitter anymore. And then I was doing a play at the Royal Court and I said, will you come and see it? And then she couldn't, something happened. But the following week, I got asked to come in and meet her for Kate. And we did a little chemistry meet. And of course, we just got on like a house on fire. But as a worker, as a writer, producer, creator, like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And she's incredibly funny.
And, like, comedy is probably harder than the more intense stuff in a way, is it?
I think comedy has like a method to it, I think. It's really interesting. You can break it down.
Okay.
And Sharon's amazing at breaking it down. And specific words are funny. Like, there is an art to it.
Yeah.
But then you need to be able to throw all that away. And that's where Sharon has a brilliant freedom as well in going, now do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. So tell us about Small Town, Big Story then. Chris O'Dowd is kind of carving out this niche now,
isn't he?
He's amazing,
right?
Small town kind of warm communities, like, but with all kinds of darkness then underneath.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. So you meet this town, Drumbawn, that is hiding everything. Everyone's hiding something. And
it's where Irish people were.
Yeah, exactly. It's what Chris knows really well, actually. He has all these little characters that have so many nuances. It's only somebody kind of from a backwater can write a backwater, really, you know. Yeah, so it's so everybody in Drumbone has a secret. And then this woman who used to live there, who's now gone off to America to be a big Hollywood producer, comes back and is kind of making this type of Game of Thrones style show. And she really wants to make it in this town because she wants to get back into the town. And she's the catalyst, really, to blow open all those secrets. And that's Christina Hendricks. And she's had a previous relationship with Paddy Considine, who I'm married to.
Yes.
And it's like one by one they pop off. It's great.
Yeah, I haven't watched them all yet. Yeah. Like, but it's layering up.
Yeah.
Telling us various things. Listen, your character uses a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Was that kind of challenging?
Brendan, I got the part and I was thrilled. And then they sent me the scripts and I saw that I was a wheelchair user. And I immediately phoned my friend, who's also an actor. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get cancelled.
Yeah.
This is terrible. Oh, my God. And she said, go back, read the scripts properly and see. And there's some flashbacks. So it makes sense. There's a reason why they use, you know, an able-bodied person. But I was very scared because I felt like, obviously, you know, it should be, you know, somebody with experience of a life lived as a wheelchair user. But the story begins differently. So
yes.
Thankfully it makes
with her
sense.
Husband.
Yes.
Yes, which is just starting.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
It does make sense. But we went out and had a few sessions at the centre in Dunleary, actually. And they were amazing at kind of teaching me how to use the wheelchair and how to do curbs and, you know, all that was fascinating. But really, I mean, the truth is that I can never pretend to know what it's like to be in the wheelchair because you have the facility of being able to get up and get yourself a cup of coffee and leave it, you know, so.
Yeah, the character is fairly highly sexed as well.
She is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sure, aren't we all, Brenda?
Yeah, exactly. <You know? laughs> come here. Tell me about this thing, The Second Woman. So you're in the Opera House, returning in triumph to the Opera House in Cork this summer. But it sounds like an extraordinary production altogether and an extraordinary feat for you to have to do as well.
So basically, there's this incredible film. There's a director called John Cassavetes, a very famous American actor and director. And he has a set of films that every single actor worth their salt will love, right? And Jenna Rowlands was his wife and she stars in a lot of his films. And so basically he has a film called Opening Night. And in that, Jenna Rowlands plays this actress who's starring in this play called Second Woman. Then Nat Randall and her partner, her creative partner, they made this show that's based on one scene from that play, Opening Night. And so we will be doing that scene for 24 hours, me and 100 actors. So it's amazing. I saw it in London with Ruth Wilson at the Young Vic and I watched it for 3 hours and it was incredible. So you can stay for 3 hours, you can stay for 20 minutes, you can stay for 24 hours.
But you'll be staying for 24 hours.
I will be there 24 hours.
Okay, with comfort breaks and stuff like
that. Well, I think like at the end of each... you might do the scene 7 times and then you'll get a little wee break or a quick little fix of props returning to places and
would power through that.
But other than that, I don't know how I'm going to do it. It's going to be so exciting.
So is part of it like that the actress is going doolally from lack of sleep
going
over
through,
24 hours?
She's going through a breakdown. She's at a point where her age is terrifying her. There's a young woman who gets hit by a car outside the theatre and she sees herself in this young woman. So she has become her own second woman.
I mean you, the actress, when you're doing it, will you not be going doolally?
I suppose I will be going a little bit doolally, but that's part of it. The repetition. She's
meeting
this ex-lover.
And how are you rehearsing? Will you have had a full dress rehearsal of 24 hours before you do it? Or
do you rehearse
with the 100 actors? Or this is mind-blowing.
So I have 2 weeks of rehearsal and part of that is a large technical rehearsal as well because there's cameras involved and everything. And each day they'll increase the number of actors that I work with. So we'll have a 4 on one day and then 8 on the next day. And, you know, but on the 24-hour day, it's 100 that I've never met before.
Really?
Yeah. And I've never had rehearsal with them. And so each man comes in and it depends on the chemistry that you have with them. So sometimes the scene will be funny. Sometimes the scene will be nervous and jittery. And other times it'll be really super confident and edgy. Amazing. You just don't know who you're going to deal with.
So you're just going to be busking along with...
Yeah, it's like being in the rehearsal room, but you get to open it up to everybody.
And presumably normally when you're doing a play, you pretty much know what's going to happen each night or how it's going to be.
You do. Like, but when it's really good,
yeah,
you always have an edge. So sometimes you just go, I worked with this company years ago and their rules for working are, one of them is, whatever happens is the only thing that can happen. And it's a brilliant rule.
Yeah.
It just suddenly changes your life into going, everything's up for grabs. So say your glasses fall off in the middle of a scene. Grand, let me help you get them. The scene has to continue, but we have to find a way around everything. So it also means if you forget your line, that's OK. It's meant to happen. I'm here to save you. You're here to save me. We do it together.
Love it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's so like, Nureyev.
It's life.
This,
life is in there as well somewhere, isn't
Nureyev
it?
Nureyev had this amazing quote that they don't pay to watch us dance. They pay in case we fall.
Absolutely.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. Yeah. And sure, isn't that the only reason they're listening to the radio today, in case something might happen?
Yeah,
something
exactly.
might go wrong. Brilliant.
My toes fell
off. So Jeopardy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Is the stage a better buzz than TV or film? You've come alive there now.
I know. I think it all depends. Like getting to do scenes with Paddy Considine and getting to work with Chris O'Dowd, you know, and Christina Hendricks, like that kind of stuff is incredible. It's a real thrill, you know. Mm. And very small scenes with lovely Andrew Bennett and David Wilmot, like that's incredible. But I think nothing goes off inside me like a little alarm that goes, you have to get back, you have to do a play, you have to do a play.
Okay.
And I love the fact that it's different and you get to go wrong, but you get to go right as well. Let's just, you know, you find it all the time.
Amazing. What else are you up to? Not that all that isn't enough.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's it for now. So there's, you know, a couple of shorts that I've been working with this really exciting young director in London. And so just kind of just seeing what's out there and not feeling too pushed, too worried, which is unusual for me. Just leaving space to see what can come in.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, Small Town Big Story starts on Sky and now on February 27th. Mm. Eileen Walsh, thank you so much.
Thanks,
that was
Brendan.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Thank you.